Thanks for listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Andrea Lorien, one of the producers on the show, and what you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertleben in for McKittle LaFrac. Last week, President Donald Trump signed an executive order declaring the federal government will recognize only two genders, male and female. That order will be challenged in court, as will a flurry of others that he gave his signature to over the last week. Today on the show, we're going to discuss what this executive order means for LGBTQ plus people in Vermont and whether state laws that run counter to Trump's proclamation will provide protections for people who may feel threatened by it. And we want to know how you feel about President Trump's executive order and action on gender identity. Does the order make sense to you? What are people in your community saying about it? If you identify as trans, non-binary, or gender fluid, do you feel confused by what the executive order means and the impact it could have on your life if court challenges against it are unsuccessful? Give us a call at 800-639-2211. That number again is 800-639-2211. You can also send us an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org as we get into this conversation. And our first guest this hour is Polly Crozer. She is the Director of Family Advocacy for GLAD Law. Polly, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thanks for having me, Mitch. Happy to be here.
Let's start. I just want to ask about the acronym for GLAD first. What does that stand for, Polly?
Great question. Our full name is GLBTQ Legal Advocates and Defenders, and our short name is GLAD Law.
Okay, thank you. I want to start off with something that President Trump did just last night. He signed an executive order regarding trans service members in the military, essentially barring them from serving openly in the armed forces. Now, this is a story that is still developing, as so many are with these flurry of executive orders. But what can you tell us about that particular order regarding the military and trans people?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, for those of you who might remember, GLAD Law challenged the first military ban in 2017. And so I think we were anticipating that President Trump was going to issue some other executive order or order regarding the military. As you said, it came out last night. I would say, in short, I think we weren't surprised that he put it out, but we were, I think, you know, saddened, upset that the language of it is truly horrific. It feels you know, really just dripping with animus and misunderstanding, really, that transgender service people are serving. They're fit to serve. They're tremendous patriots who are doing so much for this country. And I think the executive order is just, you know, really harmful to military readiness. I mean, I think that it pretty much goes contrary to what his stated goals are and is really just about targeting the service members who are serving our country. So GLAD Law is preparing to challenge this executive order, probably to file today or tomorrow. Obviously, we don't know yet what the immediate impacts are. I think we have a good idea of what they will be. Obviously, I think we take it tremendously seriously. I think particularly because the military is such an incredibly important societal institution. It's the biggest employer in the country. And we can't have the president just, you know, playing with what is such an incredible institution that's so important for the country and stability overall.
And such a cross-section of people that serve in the military as well, all across the exactly. country. You were mentioning, Polly, some of the language that you felt was really abrasive, I suppose, you know, in that order. You know, without having you quote anything directly, one of the things that I noted was, I think, in essence, he was saying that letting people serve, trans people serve in the military openly would have an effect on the cohesion of units. That was one of his criticisms of that. Is that something that you are pointing out when you talk about some of the more alarming language?
I think there's so many alarming pieces, Mitch. I think you have hit on one of them, right? I think every people, you know, I've not served in the military, but obviously our organization is connected to many who have. And, you know, one of the values is that they're all in this together. They're fighting for the country, for equality, for equal opportunity. And when you go into the military, you're on the same team and you're not, you know, you're not a transgender person. You're, in effect, you're a service person who is serving their country and has met the high standards for service. So transgender people do not hurt cohesion, right? They serve and they have served with honor for a very long time. And I think the other piece that I think is really, you know, stunning to me is just this kind of suggestion that, you know, transgender people are somehow dishonorable, right? Which we know, I think, is just totally untrue and not based in reality, right? So it's a cohesion piece. It's the fact that, you know, it seems to accuse people of not being up to standards to serve, which we know is absolutely wrong. It's just, I think so many pieces of it are just flat out wrong and really seeking to target transgender people and, you know, undermine, you know, what we know to be really fabulous contributing members of this institution.
Let's move on to some of the legal aspects of all of this, because I want to know more about what an executive order actually is and what it does. It bypasses voting by lawmakers in the House and Senate, obviously. The president just signs his authorization to something, but that doesn't mean it instantly becomes law, right?
Absolutely. I mean, an executive order is actually, and I think of it as pretty limited, right? It's the president issuing a directive really to federal agencies. And it's supposed to fall within his authority as president. Of course, this president isn't doing that. He's kind of issuing executive orders on a host of topics all at once, regardless of their lawful or constitutional status. But in effect, an executive order, it doesn't change the statutes. It doesn't change federal law. It doesn't change the U.S. Constitution. And of course, it doesn't impact how courts interpret laws or constitutions. So I think that's really important for folks to remember that, of course, they are harmful, right? They create chaos. He's creating confusion and fear, and that's what he's aiming to do. But we have to remember how the law works, and that, for example, Title IX and Title VII and kind of the core statutes that protect so many people in their everyday lives, and of course, the Constitution, still stand, as does state law, right? It doesn't change state law. So I think it's important for us to put this in the appropriate context and not let it have more power than it should have.
I'm glad you mentioned state law. We're going to get into some of that, you know, here in Vermont in a moment. We are speaking with Polly Crozer, Director of Family Advocacy for GLAD Law. You can join this conversation if you'd like. Give us a call at 800-639-2211, 1-800-639-2211, or send an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. So, Polly, what are some of the legal avenues available then to challenge some of these executive orders? How does the process work?
Well, I think a number of organizations are working really hard to challenge executive orders, right? So because it is a presidential order, you can go into federal court to challenge it. I'll share just by virtue of example, right? Because obviously a number of organizations are challenging various aspects of not only this order, but of course there are so many executive orders to address. That GLAD Law is challenging two aspects of the gender order. One is likely to be filed soon. It hasn't yet been filed, but there will be a challenge to the military order. And then in terms of the gender order, we have filed a challenge to the part of the order that addresses the Bureau of Prisons, right? Mm. So I think there will be more challenges, certainly from many fronts. I think one of the things that is important for folks to remember is that, you know, while I did say that they should be interpreted as limited, of course, the executive orders are having a harmful impact right now. And I think in particularly in the prison context, we are seeing that, right, that the day after that gender order issued, the Bureau of Prisons was already transferring prisoners in terms of their housing, right? And that really creates tremendous harm for that individual. So there are lots of court challenges that are starting or soon to be filed. And of course, hopefully something called like a temporary restraining order, or hopefully there'll be temporary orders to stop the impact of the executive orders right away. And then the litigation will go on probably for many years and then appeals after that. So this is a marathon. It's definitely a marathon, and that's why it's so important to have kind of to stay up to date on what's happening.
that marathon aspect that you're talking about is really interesting. And, you know, we have seen so many cases go through different levels of courts and challenges. And I think what people are ultimately wondering is, I mean, I'll ask you this question. How many of these do you think are going to make it all the way to the Supreme Court? And is that Trump's sort of end game here? It is obvious that he put a number of people on that court. There are people who believe that the court is heavily weighted in his favor. Is that what he's ultimately hoping happens here?
That's a great question, which I will answer in real time because I haven't put a lot of thought into it, Mitch. I have to say that the first thought, I think, for a lot of folks right now is just how can we stop the harm happening to real life people right now? And how can we make the arguments that we know we need to make, right? To remind people of the Constitution, remind people of federal law, and to kind of hold back this harm. He might be aiming at the Supreme Court. I actually am going to hold out some hope that some of these executive orders are so blatantly unconstitutional that I can't imagine the Supreme Court would even take the case, right? Take, for example, like the birthright citizenship yeah. executive mm-hmm. order, right? So I think that the Supreme Court is probably, for some of these, pretty far off. I think that the hope is to, you know, really stop the harm and really I think his goal is not necessarily the Supreme Court. I think his goal is really just chaos, confusion, and targeting, and that every one of us has a role in just saying, you know, not everybody can file a lawsuit, of course, but everybody can say, wait, let me hit pause. Let me not go down the rabbit hole of targeting people who are wonderful contributing members of our communities. Let me think for myself and keep reaching across the aisle, keep, you know, being the good person I am. I think that's what it's going to take.
We've got a caller on the line from Windsor. It's Michael. Hi, Michael. You're on Vermont Edition.
Hi, Mitch. It's Michael from Windsor. I wanted to give you my opinion and share a quick story. I'm not surprised, but I'm really devastated by these decisions that Trump's making. And it's highlighted by an experience I had a year ago, September. I got an email from someone I didn't recognize, a person named Jen. And in her message, she said she had been a student of mine in 1991 and was reaching out to reconnect and say hello. She said, but when I was in your class, my name was John. And so we went out to dinner in Windsor and caught up, and she joined the Marines, and she was on a helicopter crew in the Middle East. She later got her PhD in biology. She was a professor in New York and then a postdoc at Dartmouth, and now she's teaching in New Hampshire. I think that's a pretty good life story for a transgender woman, and I don't know why anyone would want to suppress just go against things like that.
Well, she sounds very much like the kind of person Polly was just describing a moment ago, who wants to serve in the military, serve their country, put their life on the line. Michael, can I ask you, what was your reaction of seeing this person who you knew as John when you were teaching? And was this high school? I'm guessing high school?
No, it was the middle school.
A middle school. And then, you went out to dinner and saw her. What was your honest reaction to this? And did it strike you as odd? Did it strike you as, no, this is the same person that I remember, and now they're telling me this story?
I remember sitting at the table at Harpoon Outdoors. It was in September, and I had anticipation and a little bit of nervousness, mainly about how I might respond. I didn't know if I wanted to be totally appropriate. And when I saw her, it was just a wonderful feeling, a feeling of relief. And I didn't recognize her I remembered John, but big hugs and just easy conversation. And I felt really good. And but plus, I mean, she was reaching out to me to thank me for the things that I did when I was her teacher. Mm. So I felt really, really good about it, and I felt proud of her. And I think I felt like now I have an even stronger reason to be an ally and an advocate for trans people. And so I think she empowered me a little bit with giving me another reason to speak up for trans people and for her.
Michael, thank you very much for sharing that story. I really appreciate it. Let's go to Valerie, who's on the line from South Burlington. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, can you hear me, Mitch?
Can indeed, yes.
Okay. I'm wondering whether the Trump administration could do something to rescind the marriage that my wife and I have as lesbians. We're legally married. Can the Trump administration do something that makes it so that we're no longer legally married?
It's a great question, Valerie. Thank you for that. Polly, would you like to tackle that one?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question, Valerie. We get that question a lot. As you may know, GLADLAW was one of the organizations that works on marriage equality a lot and worked on the Goodrich case in Massachusetts and the Obergefell case in the U.S. Supreme Court. And I just want to say really clearly, no executive order can undo marriage equality. None. And I think that, you know, a couple points to remember, which is marriage is really just such a clear and powerful rule that is really popular. And it's grounded in constitutional law. There's actually been three Supreme Court cases that have essentially said marriage equality is the law of the land. And then we had in 2022, a bipartisan Congress pass the Respect for Marriage Act that codified that right in federal law again. So this is one of those things that I really, a message I want to share, which is marriage equality isn't going anywhere. An executive order can't get it do away with that. And to the extent that the administration tries to do that, there's many, many people working very, very hard to protect that right, because we know how important it is, not only for families and children and generations like grandparents, but it's important for institutions and businesses, because marriage equality is a clear, simple rule that so many people depend on, and you simply undoing it would be unfathomable.
Thanks, Polly. Valerie was asking that question. You're saying that's one that you've been getting a lot. What are some other common questions you've been hearing about in the weeks, months leading up to Trump's inauguration and now that he is president? What are some common questions that your office gets?
I get a lot of questions about marriage. I get a lot of questions about parentage and protecting your parent-child relationship, which could be its own radio show, which I won't. I also get into a lot of questions about gender markers. Right. And actually, GLADLAW has an ID project that provides pro bono legal services for anyone in New England who needs help updating their gender markers. And I think the executive order is one piece where people have a lot of questions. It's been evolving a lot. Right. And I think just to be clear that the executive order essentially says that for federal identity documents like passports and consular records of birth abroad, that the federal government will only issue ones that reflect sex at birth and will no longer issue X markers in any event. So we've gotten a lot of questions about that, and we're working on kind of a basic information sheet for folks. I do just want to say that, of course, that doesn't change state law, and your a person's birth certificate is a product of your state. And for a state like Vermont, which I'm sure Meg or Dana might touch on, it doesn't change your ability to update your gender markers in your state. So that's one piece that we've gotten a lot of questions on, gender markers.
Polly, thank you so much for giving me the perfect segue into our next segment. And I really do appreciate your time with us. We have to take a quick break right now. But when we come back, we'll be speaking with leaders at Family Equality and Outright Vermont about their work supporting LGBTQ+ families and youth. And Polly Crozer, thank you so much again for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us now is Meg York, Senior Policy Counsel and Director of LGBTQ+ Family Law and Policy for the organization Family Equality. That is a national organization to advance legal and life equality for LGBTQ+ families. And joining us as well is Dana Kaplan, Executive Director of Outright Vermont, which supports queer and trans youth across the state of Vermont. Welcome both. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Mitch.
And Danny, you're with us too? Oh, great. There you are. Listeners, again, we want to hear your thoughts on the recent executive order. Do you identify as LGBTQ or does someone in your family perhaps? Maybe you've got some questions for our guests. Please do give us a call. If so, 800-639-2211 is the number. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also send an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. And Meg York, I want to start with you. What has your office been hearing both in the days and weeks leading up to the election and since Trump won and took office?
That's a great question. You know, I think a lot of people have fear and uncertainty about what's to come. And then as we've seen the executive orders roll out, a lot of people have confusion over what they mean. So at Family Equality, some of the things that we're trying to do are to really talk to people about what their rights are, how they can access certain protections within their states, and how to really kind of calm some of these fears. Because we know that executive orders like this one are, as Polly said, designed to cause chaos. And while I want to validate people feeling afraid and unsettled, I also think it is really important to focus on what protections exist in Vermont and how to access those protections. So at Family Equality, you know, we're here to provide support, we're here to provide information, and we're here to advocate for policies that protect people and the ability to access those laws and policies.
I really appreciate you explaining that. I've got a question from a listener who wrote an email. It's a two-part question, but I'm give you the first part, Megan. You know, if you can't answer this as far as the actual legality of it, that's fine. But I imagine your office has the resources to point people in the right direction. But maybe you can. We got this email from Maya in Stafford, which reads, I'm a trans and non-binary Vermonter with two questions for today's show. Again, this is just the first part of her question. It seems pretty likely the order will immediately impact vulnerable trans folks. To what extent will this impact gender-affirming care for trans adults, both on Medicaid, Medicare, and private insurance?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Here in Vermont, gender-affirming care is legal and it's available. Whether or not your health insurance is going to cover this care may depend on whether your insurance is private or has state-based funding or whether it's federally funded. Right now, Medicaid in Vermont does cover this care. And under federal and Vermont state law, nearly all health plans cannot discriminate on the basis of sex. And we've got the Supreme Court case in Bostock that all gender identity and sexual orientation discrimination is a form of sex discrimination. So the health plans cannot discriminate against LGBTQ people. Now, Medicaid, which does cover some of this care, is partially federally funded. So it really remains to be seen on how that will play out. But, you know, the important thing to remember is that this care is legal in Vermont. And while it's upsetting and confusing to feel like everything's in flux, it's important to ground yourself in what is possible rather than engage in anticipatory compliance rooted in discrimination.
That's a really good point. And before we move on here, I want to apologize. It was Maria in Stafford. And I do want to apologize as well for automatically, you know, I'm learning about this stuff too. I automatically said her, she. This person identifies as trans and non-binary. So I want to catch myself here. We're all, you know, navigating this complex landscape. Dana Kaplan, I want to turn to you now and just get a quick temperature check with the families that you work with. You know, you and I spoke on Vermont this week. Before Trump took office, we addressed a lot of these concerns then. What have you been hearing since he actually took office?
Yeah, thanks, Mitch. You know, a lot of what my fellow guests have just spoken about in terms of a level of chaos that is really sweeping through the lives of young people. I think that there are just tremendous amounts of questions about what is going to happen, people's ability to access their health care, whether they are going to be able to be safe in their schools. I mean, a lot of what we've just always heard is just incredibly heightened right now. And I think the best thing that we can do is continue to try to slow down, to remember that we are here, that we have always been here, that we do have some really, really solid protections in place across the state of Vermont. And we have a tremendous number of allies in halls of power that are here to make sure that they are protecting our most marginalized young people. And so we will get through this together, as we always have.
getting to some of the concerns regarding state law, I want to get to the second part of Mario's question, which is, what actionable steps would you recommend trans communities take to prepare to care for each other in the next 4 years? Dana, you were just touching on some of this. For example, my roommate and I have discussed how it is important to renew our passports, not to be able to escape, but to be able to go to Canada, for example, to get hormones, contraceptives for our friends if there comes a time when the care is no longer available in the U.S. So actionable steps, Mari is asking about there, and I'll throw that open to either of you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's important to remember that what's going to work for one family and one young person is really different than what's going to work for another. And so, unfortunately, right now, there is just not one clear answer. I think having those conversations, creating some plans, being prepared for various options is really, really critical. And I think that it's really important for us to remember that we do have each other. We need to remember the things that help to ground us, that help to get us through. At Outright Vermont, we talk about how hope is a strategy, and we need to both honor the fear that folks are living with and also remember that we are going to get through this together.
I want to get to another caller. Buddy is on the line from Huntington. Hi, Buddy. Thanks for being patient waiting for us. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. I am a teacher, and I work with, I have worked with many, many LGBTQ teachers over the years. I've been teaching for 40 years, and I'm currently working with a great teacher, young teacher, and she is trans and is very concerned that Trump might create some executive order that would say no trans teachers, no gay teachers, and I was just hoping that I might be able to get some hope to bring to her.
That's a great question, Buddy. Meg, you know, I think you were speaking to this here. There are state laws, in effect. Certainly right now, there is no law in the state of Vermont that's going to prevent a trans teacher from teaching students. But, you know, Buddy has some concerns here. And given the way things have gone, do you think there are legitimate concerns?
I do think that it's really important to understand that a lot of these are, first of all, we cannot discriminate against people based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. That's very clear. I think it's also important to remember that Vermont offers greater protections than federal law when it comes to anti-discrimination and gender-affirming healthcare. We have several protections for families, good laws and policies related to relationship and parental recognition, anti-discrimination laws in healthcare and in coverage and hate crime laws. We've got a lot going on there. We also just had the Vermont Attorney General's Office and the Vermont Human Rights Commission issue a joint statement affirming their commitment to the enforcement of laws protecting Vermonters against discrimination on the basis of gender identity. And over the past several legislative sessions, we've seen joint resolutions supporting trans individuals. So again, that's really important to remember. Like Dana said, it's also important to remember that now is the time to come together because Vermont is not immune from some of these issues that are plaguing the country. We have a quote we'd like to reference here that hate does not grow well in the rocky soil of Vermont. But, you know, unfortunately, Vermont is not free from anti-LGBTQ attacks. And that's a truth that transgender people in our state have been all too aware of for many years. So while we have led the way in codifying many rights for transgender people and other members of the LGBTQ plus community, we really have a long way to go to create a place where we can all feel seen, safe, and respected. And so it is incredibly important for us all to come together and to support one another through law and policy, but also through allyship, advocacy, and activism. You know, now is the time to really step up and do the work on behalf of our LGBTQ community members.
Dana Kaplan, to Meg's point that she just made there, you know, we saw in this past election cycle, Trump got more votes in Vermont this time around than he did even the first time that he ran or the other time that he ran, for that matter, which is, to Meg's point, there are a lot of people who support his agenda here in the state of Vermont. Is there any kind of strategy for communicating with folks, you know, that you would like to get through to them that, you know, these policies that the person you support is really hurting your friends and neighbors here. You may not approve necessarily of their lifestyle or their choices, but they're also Vermonters. How do you bridge that gap? Is there a way to communicate better away from all this chaos that we're seeing happen in just the first week or so of Trump's presidency?
Sure. I think that it's important just to, first of all, be grounded in the fact that being trans is not a lifestyle, right? So just to say that we're talking about human beings and our identities. And this world is going to be better with each of us being our authentic selves, having the healthcare that we need, having the legal protections that we need to show up in this world. Because we know that social policies like this have deep, deep impact, especially on the lives of young people, on their health and well-being. We see disparities when we look at our youth risk behavior survey for LGBTQ young folks and other marginalized young folks compared to their peers. And so we have to recognize that this is actually about young people's lives and ability to survive. And we need to make sure that we're creating the conditions for young people to see future possibilities for themselves. This is a political game that is having direct impact on Vermont youth and families. And so at the end of the day, it doesn't need to be your experience. You don't need to understand, but you can trust people and know that they're doing what they need to do to be themselves and to live.
Hmm. Shauna is on the line from Barrie. Hi, Shauna. You're on Vermont Edition.
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for taking my call. I have a couple comments riffing off of what y'all are just talking about. There are elders in our community as well. This executive order will affect them. We know that it's going to affect service members, and obviously it's affecting our youth. So for the people out there that support these policies, please understand that no one is safe. Every demographic that you know, every age group, every type of person is affected by an executive order like this, even veterans whom those same people would support so well. And seniors, obviously, and our kids. So please know that no one is safe. These are coming for everyone. And that is why my second comment is that allyship is so important today. We have to have allies more than ever because people in our community, in the trans community, we are terrified and many of us are in hiding and we need allies now more than ever. And a true ally, no one can tell the difference between you and a trans person. You need to beef up and get better. And we have a group here at the Rainbow Bridge Community Center in Barrie called the Trans Guardians. It's a support group for parents and guardians of trans people. Everyone is welcome to it. It actually meets tonight at 5:30, and it meets the fourth Tuesday of every month. Find out where your local LGBTQ groups are working and what kind of support groups they offer, because allyship is more important than ever. And finally, we got to come out. Harvey Milk said if every gay person in America came out, we would see that they are everywhere. They're in our family. They're in all ranks and files of our life. It's that time for trans people. That's the revolution coming. I know it sucks. I know it's painful. And that's why we need our allies. But if we all come out, the world will see we are everywhere. Thank you so much.
Shauna, thank you very much for the phone call. I really do appreciate that. Meg York, I want to move on to something that was touched on a little bit by Polly Crozer earlier, something I want to ask Dana Kaplan about because he works with so many young people as well. It's about Vermont state protections. And in 2022, Governor Scott said he was happy to sign H-628. That's a bill which allows Vermonters to amend their gender listed on their birth certificate. And this means Vermont allows people to select X as their gender on their licenses. What does that mean when they make that selection, X?
That's a good question. So in Vermont, we offer MF or X on identity documents. And in terms of state-based documents like driver's licenses, you can still get your gender marker changed here in Vermont. And it's really important to know that this executive order doesn't affect that. Hmm. The executive order is aimed at federal agencies. So you can still make those choices here in Vermont. You know, there may be some questions that arise down the line about how that might work with real real ID compliance pieces, as we're seeing that become an issue moving forward. But it's really important to know that people here in Vermont have the choice to affirm their identity that's right, that reflects them on their identity documents here in Vermont.
Now, what about passports, passport renewals, something like that? If somebody already has X on their passport, they want to keep it that way, should they just proceed as usual, do nothing, try to make a change? I mean, these things get really confusing.
It can get confusing. The current understanding is that all validly issued passports are still valid. It might come up when somebody goes to renew their passport, what they can do at that juncture in time. Passports for a long time recently were allowed to have the X gender marker on them. And those passports are still valid in effect today. Many passports extend for 5 years for youth, 10 years for adults. And so, you know, by the time those passports are up for renewal, people may be able to continue using X. We don't know what's coming down the line. But for folks who are trying to update their passports, we have heard that that they are not allowing people to change their gender markers in an update at this moment in time. So that is that's the current understanding of the state of things in that regard.
Dana Kaplan, I want to ask you a question. You touched on this a little bit before in one of your answers about the importance of local leaders and the folks that we have here in Vermont right now who are looking at this issue and are probably going to be looked upon by folks in the queer community to stand up and help. I'm thinking about someone, especially a popular governor like Phil Scott, who's also a Republican. Can someone like him sway a more conservative Vermonter, perhaps, who may initially support Trump's executive order here? Or do you think there's no longer any space for someone like Phil Scott to break the hold that Trump has over his most loyal and ardent followers?
I think that what we can all do is focus on where we've got agency and control. So absolutely, we are looking to our governor and to other folks in the halls of power here to help set precedent and to create really clear boundaries and expectations around how we're going to show up for each other and protect our most marginalized communities, period. It's got to come from leadership. It's got to come from the top. So I absolutely do think that there is a role for everybody to play, and most especially folks who have positions of power, to be able to set the tone, set the precedent, and make sure that we are doing right by every single member of our community.
I have sort of an odd question here because I find myself in a weird position. You know, we are highlighting this issue because it's extremely important, obviously, to so many folks who are really feeling uncertain and scared right now. At the same time, and we've talked about this already on the show today, there seems to be a kind of strategy here for Trump and maybe, you know, folks in the administration to create this chaos, to do things like these executive orders, which make these bold headlines, and there's a reaction automatically. Obviously, are we in some ways playing into his hands by talking about these things? Is it a catch-22 in effect, or do we have to respond when things like this happen? You know, and is it how we respond that matters, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we absolutely have to respond, because if we are not talking about it, silence is incredibly hurtful and harmful to people. This is the reality. If you are a trans person, if you are a person of color, you are aware of what's going on. You are aware of what's at stake. It is real and alive in your body, in your everyday interactions, whether you're in school, whether you're at home, whether you're walking down the street. And so there is absolutely something very important in terms of speaking about what's going on so that people don't feel alone. Otherwise, we're just perpetrating further isolation, and that is in and of itself incredibly harmful. So we have to be talking about it, and we need to be able to find community. That is how we get through.
Okay. We have Poa on the line with us from Montpelier. Hi, Poa. You're on Vermont Edition.
Thank you. Hi, Dana. Hi. Thank you for the radio right now. It's important to hear all of our voices. I'm a trans man and a very queer, outward social worker. And self-expression is pivotal, and self-expression comes from self-knowing. So, yes, please come out. Come out as queer. Come out as a queer ally. Wear bright colors. Align yourself with the power of the sun. Align yourself with the power that we all have. I agree with Dana. We need our elected leaders right now, and we also need everybody to put pressure on our elected leaders. And have fun. This is a time for both crying and dancing. We have to hold both. It's not a catch-22, because that alone, it almost sounds like a fearful statement. We ought to have no fear. We don't know how bad these policies are going to get, but we need to stand together. This is not the time to not stand together. This is absolutely the time to stand up. And like the queer children were chanting when I went to their last day outside of the State House last year, we're here, we're queer, we're fabulous.
Paula, thank you very much for the phone call. I really appreciate it. We have time to speak with Kathy in Pownal. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air. I'm sorry, from Orwell. Kathy from Orwell. Sorry.
Hi, Mitch. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I think you're doing a great show with this, and it's a great tribute to our transgender citizens, fellow citizens. Just wanted to ask everybody to step back and think about the big picture here and how President Trump uses otherism to turn us against one another. And it has worked for him. It got him back into the White House. I've worked with transgender. I don't see why we're even having to distinguish people depending on what they do with their bodies. You know, it's ridiculous. And it's just way too much like Hitler. Very scary. I just wanted to recommend that The Atlantic has a very good piece about how Hitler used government to change government and to further this kind of discrimination against others. And also Heather Cox Richardson does a good piece today about the immigration issue and all the things that Biden did, but never made a big show of it the way Trump is doing now in terms of deporting immigrants with, you know, criminal backgrounds.
I very much appreciate that call, Kathy. Thank you so much. Meg York, I'm wondering about, you told our producer that, you know, your work focuses on family formation and protections, the two sides of family building, really. What can you tell us? Tell us a little bit more about that and the importance here of family, because as we just heard from Kathy, you know, the strategy that Trump seems to be employing here is, again, creating chaos, but also divisiveness. And, you know, family is that one thing that all Americans turn to so often to support each other. And you work very directly with this. Can you let us know how your organization supports families that have LGBTQ plus youth? And I'm sure that there are conflicts at times for people who found that difficult. How is your organization dealing with that side of the coin?
So that's a great question, and it's one that I love because my organization, Family Equality, it's really dear to me and to so many, because as you've identified, the love, belonging, support of family is so important. And at Family Equality, we offer support spaces for folks navigating different aspects of family building or family dynamics. We advocate for policies that are inclusive of all families, and we have programming and events like Family Week in Provincetown, the largest gathering of LGBTQ families in the world. So opportunities for folks to come together. And I was thinking as you were speaking, Mitch, about Kathy's reference to Heather Cox Richardson. She said something recently that really meant a lot to me. It said, if you're constantly reacting to what someone else is doing, you've ceded to them the ability to shape your reality. And that matters because we have the power here in Vermont to take a lot of steps to protect ourselves. One thing really to keep in mind is that people have a lot of the same rights that they had before Trump took office, especially here in Vermont. As Polly mentioned, marriage equality is still the law of the land. An executive order is meant to direct federal agencies. It can't just replace or erase state law. So people can still access gender-affirming care here. They can secure their families through adoption and parentage judgments, something Family Equality advocates for here in Vermont and across the countries. People can still do wills, power of attorney, healthcare proxies, advance directives, all of that other estate planning. there's a lot of scary headlines in the news right now, but that doesn't mean that you've lost all of your rights. You can access a lot of those rights right here in Vermont today. And I just collaborated fairly recently with the Pride Center of Vermont and with Out in the Open to do a webinar helping people understand their how to access family security, family legal security, and parentage, which is that legal recognition of a parent-child relationship here in Vermont. And that's available on Out in the Open's website. We are outintheopen.org under their movement building tab, zines and toolkits. You scroll to the bottom and you can watch that webinar at any time. We're also working on confirmatory adoption bill in Vermont to give people more options to secure their families. All of these are good for families, including LGBTQ families. And so there are a lot of things that people can do here. Securing families and making sure that we protect the most vulnerable among us is something that drives my work both personally and professionally. And I feel really lucky to be able to do that here in Vermont and on behalf of family equality.
And Meg, I want to let people know that we'll have links to your organization. And then through that, they can find a lot of those links that you were just talking about for people who may not be able to get all that down in the moment. Dana Kaplan, I want to ask you this, and this is riffing off what Meg was just talking about with the importance of family and how people often turn to that support network. I have to imagine, though, it can be very difficult, and you must know some very young LGBTQ plus people who, you know, have been turned away by their families or rejected by their families. Is there the, I don't want to say ability, does the support network exist in Vermont when people have to, in a way, adopt another kind of family for the kind of support they need that they maybe are not getting at home?
Yeah, I think what you're speaking to, Mitch, really is a concept that queer community is very familiar with, which is chosen family, you know, and especially for young folks who are navigating unaccepting and unsupportive families, the power of having just one supportive adult, whether that's a teacher, whether that's a GSA advisor, you know, whether that's a staff person at Outright, knowing that you've got somebody that you can turn to who sees you, who is there to believe you, who understands that your identity is valid and beautiful just as you are, those things really, really matter. And I think it comes back to what we've been talking about on the show, that this is a moment that is pretty terrifying for a lot of people, and it's going to take all of us to come together to figure out where we've got power, where we've got agency, and to do what we can do to protect our most marginalized folks. This is the moment, and we've got work to do.
Well, you're doing the hard work, both of you, and we appreciate you very much sharing those insights with us today and for our listeners on the program. Meg York, Senior Policy Counsel and Director of LGBTQ plus Family Law and Policy for Family Equality, and Dana Kaplan, Executive Director of Outright Vermont. Thank you both so very much.
Thank you very much.
And that's it for today. As always, you can weigh in on our show or pitch us ideas by emailing vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. You can also find Vermont Public on Instagram. And today's show was directed by Mary Angish. Our managing producer is John Ahrens, and our producers are Andrea Lorien and Daniela Fierro. Anna Berg is our intern. Our call screener today was Rick Barrett. Our theme music was composed by Myra Flynn. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Michaela LaFrac. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll catch up again soon.